This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Kirsten Searle. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. We're here in Matafiro in Vineyards in Gisborne, which is my second interview in Gisborne, my second interview on this trip to New Zealand. My wife and Jane have been here for 6 weeks, and I think yours is the first wine we've officially tasted in a vineyard in 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. My daughters begged us. We're not going to any more vineyards until we leave.
I've got kids that have done that over the years.
Yeah, exactly. You're going, why? What's so wrong with this? A lovely vineyard, lovely wine. And they're going, no, no, please, no more vineyards. We want to go bungee jumping. So what we're going to talk about today is a wee bit about the Gisborne region and some of your wines. I've just gone through and tasted not all of them, but
I think we knocked most of them off, Chris.
Yeah, yeah. I think we got through most of them. So we can touch on those wines a little bit as well. Matafiro, you didn't start Matafiro, you took it over in 2008. When did it start?
So, well, the original vineyard that you're sort of sitting at was first planted in the late 60s. First vintage was in 75. So last year, Matafiro celebrated 50 years. As a winery, I say fortunate to have bought it off an older gentleman called Dennis Irwin, and he and his dad established it in the 70s. So, yeah, we're the second owners. I guess we've been here 18 years, so we can't really call ourselves the new owners anymore. But we did carry on a legacy that was already started for us.
Yeah, yeah, it's 70s. That means it probably predates Marlborough as well.
Yeah, I think 75-ish, the same sort of time vineyards were being established in Marlborough, but Sauvignon Blanc, I think, didn't really kick off there down till the 80s.
Yeah.
So yeah, Matafiro was at the forefront of the New Zealand wine industry as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other ones you still had a lot of those Croatian families around, like Villa and all that in Auckland and West Auckland, but Matafiro really put Gisborne on the map.
Yeah. Okay. Probably not the most famous vineyard from Gisborne, though, but you said you're the largest at the moment, is that right?
Well, why aren't we the most famous?
Milton, I would have said, was probably the more famous, but I found out when I arrived here that Milton have just grubbed up all their vines.
Yeah, they're retiring, which is a loss for the region. They've done, I think, 35 years, so we've been here longer than them. I guess for us, we had a big gap in the middle where nothing was produced for probably 10 years before we took over.
Okay.
We're not the large, I mean, Indevin's still here, which is quite a large commercial operation, but we're the largest of what you'd probably classify as the boutique wineries in the region, and the oldest now.
In 75, or were you the first?
Well, there's been people that have come and gone in the region since then, but we're the oldest remaining one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. That's always nice to be, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, and we tasted your wines. You've got three Chardonnays,
yep,
at different levels. We'll talk about them in a bit more detail. Some Chenin Blanc, some Sauvignon Blanc. We tried Pinot Grigio and a Merlot, which I was particularly interested in.
And a Gewürztraminer.
And a Gewürztraminer as well, yeah.
Yeah, so the region really is known for Chardonnay. I mean, for us, it's 60% of our production. And if you ask the average New Zealand consumer Gisborne wine, they're going to go, oh, Gizzy Chardonnay, that's what we know. So that is a big variety for us. But also aromatics do really well in the region.
I was quite surprised when we were talking about some of the wines, and I was quite interested in trying your Merlot because I was trying to get a feel for what the climate was here. Because further south, where it should be a bit cooler, you know, normally you think further north you go in the southern hemisphere, the warmer it gets, closer to the equator, the warmer it gets.
Yeah.
So I would have been thinking Gisborne is going to be at least as warm as Hawke's Bay, if not a little bit warmer. But you're saying when we were tasting the wines that in actual fact, it's a little bit cooler.
No, we're warmer at different times of the year. So they would, like, we're warm, but we tend to lose the heat late March, early April. Whereas they stay a bit warmer April into early May. Just, I don't know why, but it's just the way we tend to be prone to rain events after that. So we do tend to lose the heat. We get a lot of high sunshine hours. I think it's one of the highest in the country.
Yeah.
But we are, being very coastal, like a lot of New Zealand, and out on a limb, we are prone to occasional rain and things as well through our season.
Oh, yeah, because you are, there's some hills between you and the Bay of Plenty, but you are, you're right. You know, the way New Zealand works is it's got the Bay of Plenty that sort of goes up into nowhere, whoops, is what my mum would say, and then back down, and you're moving up into that no man's land, aren't you?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Okay, so is that, that might be why. It's not that you're surrounded in water on all sides, but you've got a big chunk of water to the north of you as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
As well as big beaches.
But we do get seasons where we don't get those rains. I mean, we have the last few years we've had rain events. From 2013 through to about 2020, 21, 22, we had a dream run of vintages that didn't have a lot of rain at all. So,
do you think it's related to La Nina or La Nina?
Yeah, well, they say that. I'm not going to talk about whether I think the weather people get it right. I don't know. But yeah, definitely it's all related to those weather patterns. And we're typically, I think, seeing a little bit more larger rain events every now and then than rain all season. We've had a beautiful hot summer. It's just we've had a few rain events throughout that time. But it tests your viticultural practices. And to be honest, if you're on top of everything and you're not trying to carry too much fruit, you can make really good wines even in those tough seasons. I think for us, 23 was a testament to that. We harvested everything after the cyclone. There was only one parcel we didn't end up making.
That was Cyclone Gabrielle, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So, but got good growers. We've got good vineyard staff. If you do that, you can usually make good
Hawke's
wine.
Hawke's Bay was pretty wiped out by Gabrielle. I saw some of the videos.
Well, I guess so. Parts of Gisborne were as well. But again, those weather events, they hit just certain parts of the region. Yes, but Hawke's Bay was very affected too.
Yeah. And one of the other things you were saying when we were tasting the wines was that you've got rich, deep soils here in Gisborne. I always think of New Zealand as having, you know, there's a lot of valleys in New Zealand. So I expect deep, rich soils in a lot of places. You know, Marlborough, I think of as having, you know, apart from the riverbed, the Wairau riverbed, it's normally...
I think their soils aren't as fertile as ours. So we've got quite fertile plains. I mean, Gisborne's quite flat, and then you head into the hills, but all that flat plain is just fertile clay soils. I mean, you can just see the produce that's grown within the region. That shows you how fertile everything is. If you drive through Marlborough, you don't see a lot of other things growing. Hawke's Bay is a little bit similar in that they do grow other crops and things, but Gisborne's a real fruit bowl of New Zealand and a lot of produce,
Yeah, we've seen a lot of kiwi fruit.
Kiwi fruit, citrus, I mean, avocados, like citrus fruit, apples. Leader Brands here, which is a huge producer of lettuces and tomatoes and cropping land.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horticultural is a big part of the region, and not grape horticulture, but lots of other horticulture.
And so there's a lot of competition for agricultural land.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
In terms of what you can grow and all that type of thing, yeah. Yeah, let's talk about your wines, because we started off with a Sauvignon Blanc, and it wasn't what I would class as a, it's certainly not a Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc.
No.
It has a different, to me it had the passion fruit you get from the riper parts of the Wairau, but it also had a strange, almost muscat-like smell. And people often think of muscat as being sort of like a deer smell, but it's not. I think it's the muscat gland, isn't it, or something like that. I always think of it, and no one outside New Zealand will know, but you knew immediately those little pink lollies that you get.
Yeah, I remember the lollies growing up as a kid. Yeah, and I haven't picked up that flavour myself. I mean, I think that was the first crop off those vines, so often you can get quite a different flavour profile in those years.
Okay.
I think that it'll be just interesting to see what we get this year. Because the Sauvignons we've produced previous that haven't been first crop have definitely had the passion fruit. The subtle herbaceousness, I mean, Gisborne, very different in our temperature between the day and the night. So in Marlborough you have extremes. Here we're much more temperate, so that doesn't develop that really herbaceous character. So you don't see the grassy notes coming through in Gisborne Sauvignon, I think, like you do in Marlborough. And then the fruit that we get rounded and tends to sort of just soften the acidity or the feel of the acidity in the wine. So the, I say they're sort of softer, rounder styles of Sauvignon Blanc. Yeah.
Do you think that diurnal or the lack of diurnal is why the wines aren't as crisp as, say, Marlborough or some of the other regions that you get?
I think...
It's not that the Sauvignon Blanc had bags of acidity. It wasn't but thinking later on about the Chardonnay, they didn't have the acidity you'd expect from Burgundy from a cool climate, if you know what I mean.
No, but I think that's the rounded, rich, ripe style that we get out of Gisborne, and that comes from the fertile soils and the dry farming. I think that ripe note is from that climate that we get.
Everybody's, you're the second person who's mentioned dry farming. You mean no irrigation?
Yeah.
Is that because the clay holds onto the water or?
Yeah. So, two reasons. We get enough natural rainfall, but that's more important is exactly that, is that we get the rain, it stays in the soil longer because of the soil type we have that's very moisture retentive. And I mean, that's good on a number of fronts. A, it's saving a precious resource like water. And there are pockets of New Zealand that can dry farm, but Gisborne can 100% dry farm across the whole region. In terms of grapes, you need water for other crops, but grape growing is dry farmed.
We tried your Pinot Gris, and it's labelled Pinot Gris, although you were thinking maybe you should call it Pinot Grigio, but I don't know. It tastes more Alsatian Pinot Gris than an Italian Pinot Grigio.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a lovely style of Pinot Gris. We sell that into the UK at the moment and people are really enjoying it. I think sometimes Pinot Gris can have too much sweetness or not enough going on, and I think that has the sweetness up front. It's got lovely weight and texture, but it's got a dry, clean finish. Mm. So it really, and good aromatics. It's a French clone that's done really well here. It seems to produce a wonderful flavour profile. Yeah,
it doesn't taste like an Italian Pinot Grigio where they crop it really high and then they pick it really early to hold on to the acidity. Whereas you've got acidity there, but you've got a lot of weight there as well.
Yeah. And that weight again comes, that's I think a common theme across the range of wines. The weight and texture is comes from Gisborne.
Yeah.
They've got wines that you enjoy drinking. Mm.
The other one we tried was a Gewurz Traminer. New Zealand does a lot of good Gewurz. I thought it was just a little bit linear. It really had that rose water smell that you're looking for in a Gewurz, but it didn't have some of the complexity that you can sometimes see, like tropical fruits or lychee coming through or mangoes sometimes. Where was the Gewurz fit in your range, and is that what you're going for?
Yeah, we are going for a lighter, more elegant style of Gewurz Traminer, because at the end of the day, you can make wine, but you've got to be able to sell it. And we find that people that want a Gewurz tend to have shied away from those big styles, the sweet styles, the opulent styles over the years, and they're wanting lighter, fresher, elegant styles, and we've got to sell it. So, and people enjoy it because it isn't over the top. They can have two glasses. They don't feel like it's too much for them.
Yeah.
So part of that is going for, a much more cleaner, elegant style. Yeah,
I thought the acidity on that was particularly low for a Gewurz. I know Gewurz is known to be low acidity.
Yeah,
but it did seem to be not flabby. I wouldn't call it flabby, but it was right at the. It's probably one of the lowest acidity Gewurzes I've had. And maybe that's to do with the diurnals and all that sort of thing going in there as well.
Yeah, I'd have to check back on the vintage. It could have been a vintage thing as well.
The wine I thought was a little bit disappointing was your Chenin Blanc. Not because it wasn't a good wine. It was an excellent wine, but you didn't fiddle around with it. It's like a naked Chenin Blanc, but the fruit was there. It had a lot of really nice stuff going, and I thought you could have really, fiddled it up a little bit and put some lipstick on it.
It depends what your philosophy is, and we are kind of minimal winemaking. We try to let the fruit speak for itself. I mean, across the range, it's not till you get to the Chardonnays that you see a lot of winemaking in terms of the malolactic and then the oak and all that sort of thing. So again, it's a choice to make it a clean, more pure style.
Do you export the Chenin Blanc or is it mainly domestic?
It's mainly domestic. I mean, a little bit of it goes to the UK, but not a lot.
I don't see a lot of Chenin Blanc in New Zealand. I can't think of many Chenin Blancs at all.
No, there's not a lot, but see it a bit more on a restaurant wine list. We sell a lot of it in the cellar door, actually, because it is a wine that people will try on our flight of wines and really enjoy.
Yeah.
I think they don't. It's a really nice in-between style. It's in between a Sauvignon and a Chard. And they just, after trying it, probably one out of every three people will leave with a bottle of Chenin as their favourite off the tasting rack.
Yeah, no, I could see that. I thought it was, I thought it was a good wine. I just thought you could tart it up a little bit more and make it quite interesting. Because it's, when you're thinking about its climate, it was riper than a Loire Chenin, like a Vouvray.
Yeah, 24, you tried 24. 24 was a very, very ripe vintage in Gisborne.
Yeah.
Very small crops. Yeah. And ripe, everything ripened super quickly. So, yeah.
It was certainly heavier than a Loire anyway. And even on a normal year, I think it would be, all your wines feel warmer than Loire, but they're still a lot cooler than, say, a South African Chenin.
Yeah.
Where the Saffers tend to tart their wines up a lot. And then we came to what Gisborne's known for, which is your Chardonnays.
Yep.
You've got a hierarchy of wines.
Yep.
Do you want to just tell us what the hierarchy is and how that relates specifically to the Chardonnays?
Go back 18 years, New Zealand market, people weren't drinking as much Chardonnay as they are. People were very much into Sauvignon Blanc. So our first Chardonnay was always meant to be an approachable style to bring people back to Chardonnay. I mean, we just bought a Gisborne winery and we needed to sell some wine, and Chardonnay was going to be that for us. And so the first one is our single vineyard. It's completely unoaked, but we do four Merlot on the blend, so it gives that lovely creaminess to it. It's got the stone fruit, and we use Mendoza, so it's got a lovely nuttiness. So I say to people, creamy and nutty without being big and oaky. And so it's actually remained our biggest selling wine in our range. A lot to do with price point, but it's a crowd pleaser. People enjoy it. It's good on a restaurant list. So that was that one.
Just on that Mendoza clone, because it did have, I don't know if I'd describe it as nutty, but it had something there that made you think
there was oak.
Or something, or Lee's work, or there was something.
Well, there is Lee's stirring, there is Lee's work on it as well. But I do think there is that slight nutty kind of note that comes through and does feel a bit oaky and thing. When we used to have to argue with people when we first brought it out, that it wasn't oaked. And I'm like, well, I think I'd know.
I'm the one paying for the barrels.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. I would have paid for the barrels.
So Mendoza clone, is that quite common in New Zealand?
Yeah, it is. There's quite a few different clones that people use across New Zealand, but it is a common clone. It's particularly common in Gisborne. There have been a few other new clones come in that people are using as well, like 548, which we use in our church house shard. But Mendoza, when you get it right, the flavours are really, really good. It can set a bit of hen and chicken. It's probably its one thing. So sometimes it can be a bit variable in its bunch thing. This year, actually, the hen and chicken's not so bad. It looks a perfect set. But it still gives amazing flavours. So for us, we've just put more Mendoza in here at home. It is the clone of choice for us, yeah.
That's your entry level. And it does, I must admit, it does taste like I don't know if I'd use barrels, but I couldn't put my finger on it. Until you said, look, it's coming from the clonal variation. I was like, because I really couldn't work it out.
And it's got the full Merlot, which gives it that lovely
I could taste
roundness
that.
And things. Yeah.
There is a little bit of butteriness coming through on it.
Yeah, so that's really popular for us, yeah.
Okay.
And then I guess, as we know, consumers always evolve and move on and then we found out maybe 3 or 4 years after we started that people were wanting oak, but they wanted the good use of oak, not over oak to mask bad fruit. So we started making the second wine, which is our church house barrel fermented, which is a portion of hand-picked, machine-picked fruit. Goes into about 10% new oak. We use American oak, which is a little bit different again. A lot of people use French. We think that American oak goes really well with Gisborne fruit, and so we use that. So the church house barrel fermented is a really nice, more classic style of Chardonnay for us. It's got the oak. It's multi-clonal, so it has a little bit of the 548 in it, which just gives it a bit more of a added dimension and texture and layering. And then we've got our Irwin, which is our top tier, and we started making that in 2016 just to put Chardonnay from Gisborne on a pedestal and say this is the best Chardonnay that we can produce out of the region in a year. And it gets all the bells and whistles, all hand-picked fruit. We target lower yields on that parcel, It goes into 30% new oak and full malo and barrel, and we leave it in bottle for at least 18 months before we even release it. So yeah. It's the one wine I'm allowed to have that costs us a lot of money to sit on. But it's worth every penny.
Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? It's all about throughput as well.
Well, it is. I mean, turning it into cash. But I think you do yourself a disservice. If you're going to invest that money in a good wine, you want to see it at its best. So yeah, so we do that with the Irwin, but not any other wine really. Yeah,
I must admit the Irwin did stand above the Chichester. Now, I wasn't quite sure if that was because of the higher percentage of oak, maybe aging. It just had a little bit more of a toasty note, and it just a little bit more complexity.
Well, you want that, and I think that's what's nice about our three Chardonnays is you see a step up and a step change in them at what you're paying. Because sometimes, to be honest, I could try three Chardonnays from the same producer and you're wondering what the differences are.
Oh, I've done that before. I've done that with Prosecco a few times. Yeah. Where you taste a range and you go from a £10 Prosecco to a £50 Prosecco, and you go and you're tasting everything in between. You're going,
what's the difference?
Yeah.
And consumers want to see that what they're paying is they're paying for something different or something they like. I think we've got the three styles well priced, well thought out, and that they sit nicely together. They're part of the same series, but they're different and they command different price points. Yeah.
Cool. We're almost finished now, but you said some of your wines are available in the UK. Is there a particular place you can find out where they can find your wines?
Yeah, so when we sell through a group called Vindependence, so they've got a website, vindependence.co.uk, and on that website they list all the member stores which have access to purchase, and a lot of them have them stored there or have them stocked. I'm actually heading over your way on Sunday to spend 2 weeks travelling around and doing wine tastings and things. So, So, yeah, Independence.
And what about the US? Do you export to the US?
We don't export to the US at the moment. It is on our radar. I mean, we currently export to Canada, Singapore, Cook Islands and the UK. In the US, we're just trying to find the right partner. And at the moment, with a lot of the stuff that's going on there politically, a lot of people aren't really looking to fill up their portfolio. So we're just concentrating on the markets that we've got at the moment and doing those ones,
Okay, excellent. All right then, Kirsten, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris, for dropping in and visiting Gisborne.
I like it.